Welcome to the Fight with Teddy Atlas. I'm Ken Rideout, joined as always by my partner, the great Teddy Atlas. We got a special episode today. We're going to discuss the Pacquiao-Thurman fight. We're actually recording this in two separate locations. I'm in LA and Teddy's back in Staten Island. I was at the fight last night. Teddy watched from the ESPN studios in Bristol, Connecticut. So just some quick thoughts from my end on the fight. I was there, and of all the fights I've been to in the last 6 to 9 months, this was by far the biggest one-sided crowd I've seen. If Thurman had three fans there, that would be a lot. The place was electric from the minute the fight started. The only time that the crowd seemed to sit down was when Thurman landed in spots. But that's what it seemed like he was doing, is fighting in spots. When Manny would get done throwing and recover, it looked to me, Teddy, like Thurman would try to take advantage, and early on wasn't really landing any meaningful punches. He started to get some good shots in the back half of the fight, but they were like in spots, like I said, whereas Manny seemed to be landing punches in bunches. But I'm going to turn it over to you and get your thoughts, because that's what everyone really wants to hear. So turning it over to my good friend, Teddy Atlas.
Hey, you're the man, Ken, not me. You're the man. You're the one who had a credential with Ken Ryder. Where is it? Let me see it. Come on. I know it's framed somewhere. Where, you're the one with it. I don't have a credential with my name on it. You had a credential with your name on it last night. That's pretty damn good, my friend. I knew it. I knew that he had it. There it is. It's beautiful. Look at that. That is really nice. You have a media credential, your first media credential. Ken Rideout sitting there with all the rest of the press where you deserve to be sitting, where you should be sitting, representing our podcast. That was very nice. That was beautiful. And I don't have nothing. I had to stay. Where was I? I was up in Bristol, Connecticut, hanging out in a green room somewhere watching a fight. And then,
well, for the record, the pass actually says on it, Ken Rideout from the Fight with Teddy Atlas. So we were both on the credential, but no one is going to be under the impression that I was granted the press credential, Teddy. Without you, I'd be sitting on the roof watching it by closed circuit.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. I would never allow that, first of all. That would never, ever be able to happen. Look, full transparency. I picked the wrong guy. I picked Mr. Thurman to win that fight. But as far as the way it played out, you know, as far as the extent of the details, if you will, of the match, we were right on the button. Right on the button. Catch him coming, catch him going, baby. And that was our theme. We talked about it with the fight plan, that the reason why Thurman got this fight, he was selected. I'm going to jump right in right now and say Pacquiao showed me a talent I hadn't seen before, a talent that Floyd Mayweather has, a talent to select who he's going to fight, seeing ahead of time a weakness, a flaw, and selecting the opponent, knowing that he can beat him. Pacquiao, that is one of Pacquiao, that is one of Mayweather's greatest talents. You know, we could talk about his elusive ability, his counterpunching ability. He was around during the generation he was around. He beat who was in front of him. We don't know, maybe, I don't think he would have beat the guys in the 80s. You know, when you talk about Sugar Ray Leonard, the guy whose sweatshirt I'm wearing right now, and you talk about Tommy Hearns and Roberto Duran and Pernell Whitaker and Aaron Pryor and Wilfred Benitez, when you talk about those guys from the 80s, but it doesn't matter. Mayweather was around when he was around. He beat everybody, a defensive wizard, but a great scout. A great scout and manager. A great select of who to fight. And Pacquiao picked this guy. He picked Thurman. He picked him because he watched him in a Josito Lopez fight after being off for 2 years. And he saw him going straight back. And he said, you know what? One of my strengths, Ken, and this is Pacquiao talking, one of my strengths is I'm aggressive. I have fast hands. When guys go back, I go after them. And guess what? He knew that he would be able to exploit that problem, that weakness, that flaw in Thurman. He knew it, and he was right. He was absolutely right. I thought the one fight back for Thurman after the 2-year hiatus or 22 months to be exact, I thought that that would take care of enough of the problems. It didn't. He still went straight back. And that changed the whole course of the fight, that first round. Thurman was having a good round. He was having a good round. A lot of people are going to say, oh, Teddy, you mean the first... Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't care what writers say. I don't care what other people... I'm telling you what I feel. Yeah, the rhythm was changed. The dynamic was changed. The solar system changed. Everything changed in that first round. And that's what great fighters do. They change things. They change things. The first round was going to Thurman. He was having a hell of a good round. With seconds left in the round, what does he do? He goes straight back. What does Manny do? He follows him quick, hits him with the right hook, drops him. The whole fight changed right there. He caught him going. We talked about in the fight plan. Catch him going, catch him coming. And there were opportunities there to catch Manny coming. You know, I made the joke. And it wasn't a joke. It was an analogy. It fit. Where Manny was like, when he was young, was like a kid with a race car, a Ferrari, if you will. Like you drive, Ken. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. And he would run a lot of red lights. He would jump in, but he had the speed to get away with it. There was no cops there. They couldn't catch up to him. There was nobody there to crash into him, to give him a ticket, any of that stuff. He got away with it. But then I thought, well, now it was getting a little slower. The Ferrari has been changed, and maybe it's been traded in for a souped-up Mustang. You know what? He still got the Ferrari, the son of a gun. The son of a gun kept it in good shape. He kept it in the garage. He put a cover on it. He washed it. He polished it. He tuned it up. He took care of it. It's still a Ferrari. The only damn thing I want to know is, what the hell kind of gas was he putting in, Ken? Ken, I just want to know, what kind of gas is he taking? Because I can't find the gas station that's going to give me that. I looked for him today. I came back, I said, you know what? I want my car to become a Ferrari, all right? I want to be like Ken, and I want to be like Pacquiao. I want to drive a car that really could go from 0 to 60 in 1.3, all right? And I couldn't find a service station anywhere that would give me the kind of octane that Mr. Pacquiao had. I don't know. I couldn't find it. But at the end of the day, all kidding aside, you know, part of it was there was no cop there to give a ticket. Maybe it really wasn't a Ferrari. Maybe it wasn't a souped up Mustang. It was a Porsche. But he was fast enough to get away with that old Pacquiao stuff. The thing that I didn't count on was, if we're going to stick to the analogy of getting a ticket, you know, the sheriff there to give the ticket, I didn't realize that Thurman, representing the sheriff, was going to be the sheriff from that old movie, Smokey and the Bandit, Jackie Gleason. I didn't know that he... Remember that? And where's Rob when you need him? Where's Rob when you need him? Because I want to put that up. Ken, I want to put that up. Smokey and the Bandit.
That was Sheriff Buford T. Justice.
That's him. Buford, baby, Buford T. Justice. That's beautiful. And I didn't realize that was Thurman. That he can't give a ticket to nobody. You could be driving a tricycle, and he couldn't give you a ticket. And, you know, listen, we have our fun with it, but my hat's off. My hat is off to Pacquiao. He's a special guy. He, no matter what kind of gasoline he was using or not using, you still got to be able, at 40 years of age, to get in that ring, be able to think of the right punches to throw, have the reflexes to throw them, have the gumption to let them go, and have the stoutness in your chin at 40 years of age to take it when you have to take it, which he did, to be able to win late rounds, be able to win the late parts of rounds over the younger guy, to be able to figure out and have, as I said, the timing, the reflexes to execute those things, the heart, the grit, the desire to still do them at this point in his life against a younger, bigger, strong, capable fighter. You got to give him all the credit. I give him all the credit in the world. I really do. The opportunities were there for Thurman to still catch him coming. But once he got dropped, a lot of stuff went out the window. You know, the dynamics, they changed. As I said earlier, just the biorhythms, if you will, of the fight, Ken, it changed. It changed. Like, now the fight plan wasn't there. Now he got dropped. Now it was like he was catching up. Now it's like he's just going after a guy. You can't just go after a guy. Not at this level. You can't just go after a guy. Not Manny Pacquiao. He can counterpunch too. And he did counterpunch. And he could survive those moments. He could see those moments. The thing was to be able to go to the body of the smaller guy. Thurman did it in spots. He did not do it consistently enough. I think that, again, I'm not taking anything away from Pacquiao. He landed that punch. But that did chart the course of that night. It steered that ship in the direction, the wrong direction. And for the rest of the night, it was Thurman being the captain trying to steer the ship back to the right direction. He got put into a position where, I said it a minute ago, I'll say it again. He was just fighting. He was just throwing. He was just trying to get even. He was trying to get back at him. Instead of doing things that were there to be done. Instead of being in control and patient enough to catch Pacquiao coming in with a little reckless aggression. There were opportunities to do that, but his mindset was no longer there. He had been dropped on his, you know, on his hiney. And now he was looking to just be the bigger guy. Just get back to him instead of being able to color in the things that needed to be colored in, that were there to be colored in, that were there to be worked on, to be executed, to be taken advantage of. The mind wasn't there for that anymore. He wasn't there for that anymore. And he fought a gallant fight. He showed heart, Thurman. And matter of fact, he was making a nice run. Those late rounds, he was making a nice run. I thought Father Time might have snuck in there in the ninth round and touched Pacquiao for a minute. Touched him. But the great ones, they find a way. And what happens? The next round, the tenth round, when the momentum looked like it was shifted, it looked like the younger guy was getting it going. What did the great Manny Pacquiao, and I don't use that word, I very rarely use it, but I'm going to use it here. What did the great Manny Pacquiao do? He found a way to hurt him to the body. He hurt the bigger guy. The bigger guy was supposed to hurt the smaller guy to the body. He hurt him in the 10th round, and it changed all that momentum. It canceled out all that momentum. It put the ship back in the direction that Pacquiao needed. It took an important round out of play right there, because it would have been I had him winning the ninth round. He would have won the 10th, 11th, and 12th. He was in position, Thurman, to possibly win four rounds in a row. And depending on how he won it, maybe he could have eked out a draw, maybe he would have came short by one point, but he was doing what he had to do. He had the momentum going. He needed that 10th round. He had to have it. And Pacquiao, as I said, he found a way to hurt him, to spoil those plans, to change that, to stop that from happening. The right hand, the I call it the Southpaw killer, it started to show up. It was showing up throughout the night for Thurman. But Pacquiao showed the character. We talk about it. He showed the chin. You know, he was able to handle what it when it came. He absorbed those shots when they did come and find them. And they came and found them. And he did that. One of the things that I wanted to do, and we got started, you know, and I got so much into talking about you getting your first credential, which still is really so, makes me so happy. It's unbelievable. Don't let me ever see it up on, not that I would see it, I don't know how to go on a computer, but don't let me ever see it up on E, what do they call that? When they eBay. Sell stuff on the internet? eBay. Don't let me ever see that on eBay. Ever. Ever. That credential, Ken. Don't let me ever see that credential on eBay. But what I wanted to start this broadcast with was we want to send our thoughts and prayers out there to Maxim Dadashev, the fighter who was injured the night before the Pacquiao fight, Friday night on an ESPN card. And, well, we just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to him and his family. And we know all the boxing family out there, all the boxing community out there are sending their prayers and thoughts too to help Dadashev pull through this this difficult fight that he's in now, being injured Friday night. So we ask everybody to do that, and I'm sure everybody will. But getting back to this fight, again, it's so many areas that deserve mentioning and credit. As I touched on earlier, the area of just being a good scout. You know, Manny and his people, they did a good job. They saw, kind of like a scout for baseball. You know, you get the scouts, they come out there, they give the information to the hitter. They say, okay, this guy, he tips off when he's going to throw a curveball. When he's about to throw a curveball, his left elbow comes up a little bit. And you know the curveball's coming. So you sit on it, bang, right over the fence because you knew a curveball was coming. Manny's team did a great job scouting. They knew that Thurman would step straight back. They were prepared for it. And like I said, they pounced on it. They took advantage of those opportunities. And that was frustrating for me a little bit. How did you feel about watching the setup of the fight? They're talking about all these strength coaches through the gazoo that he's got. He's got this strength coach. He's got a guy for this, a guy, you know, for the pecs, a guy for the necks, a guy for the muscle that connects to the elbow muscle. The elbow connects to the shoulder muscle. The shoulder muscle connects to the bicep muscle. The bicep muscle connects to the thigh muscle. The thigh muscle connects to the hip muscle. The hip muscle connects to the calf muscle. I mean, you got all that. All right, beautiful. Beautiful. You got all this stuff. And then could somebody teach him not to go straight back and get hit with a punch that's going to blow the fight for you? With all the talk and all the stuff about all that stuff, conditioning, this, that, all good stuff, I get it. But somebody forgot where it all starts, where it all begins, where it all ends, with your boxing ability, with your boxing IQ, with your technique, with what you do when it's connected to the sweet science, the art of pugilism. You know, they paying attention to all those things, but nobody, it seems like nobody bothered to make sure that he wasn't going to do the same thing he did in the Josita Lopez fight. And he did.
Yep. It seemed like, regardless of how much strength work he did, It seemed like he could have hit Manny on the head with a sledgehammer. He wasn't going anywhere. He'd seemed completely unfazed by some big shots that Thurman landed and just kept coming back. He'd explode in big flurries, then recover, and Thurman would touch him a few times to the body on the elbows and the arms. And occasionally he did land some good shots, but even when he did, Manny seemed to walk right through them and come back even stronger. And like you said, I thought that the tide was changing dramatically in the ninth, and I was thinking, okay, we may be able to salvage this bet. Tenth round, like you said, he touched him to the body, and it was like the tide shifted just like that again on a dime. And you could really feel the momentum shifting in the building too, because it was dead quiet after the through the ninth into the tenth. He hit him with that body shot, and the place came alive again, and so did Manny.
You know, the one thing that with good, and I'm hesitant to use this word. I was going to say with good comes things that you got to deal with that, you know, that would, I guess that would suggest that I'm going to say comes bad. And I really don't want to say that. But the next thing you start talking about is who's he going to fight next? And the one thing that I know is going to pop up there, I mean, obviously, you're going to talk about the winner of Spence and Porter. And as much as I love Manny, that is his retirement fight if he fights Spence, for me. That's where all of this stops. That's where it ends. Because Spence is not an inactive guy. Spence is a huge, big welterweight, as we talked about Thurman being, but Spence is even bigger. Spence is a guy who's younger than Thurman. Spence is a guy who is an Olympian. Spence is a guy who can go get you, and he can also box. He's got the skill levels to go, you know, the technique levels and the boxing IQ and the versatility to be able to do whatever has to be done at a moment in that ring, as well as being able to go attack that body, being able to, again, put pressure, counterpunch, catch him coming, go and, you know, take that car, if you will. We're going to use the analogy of a car. He wouldn't allow the pace of the car to be what Manny wants it to be, you know, maybe 60 miles an hour, 55 miles an hour. Spence can take it up to 70, 75 miles an hour out on the highway and blow those cylinders out. You know, Spence would be his boogeyman. Spence would be the guy that Manny does suddenly look old. Now look, Manny is so special that some people can argue with me. And fine, I understand that. You've earned the right. Your fighter gave you the right to argue with me from now on. To say, how can you be sure after what he's done here? But for me, There comes a time when you have to say he can't get away with it with this guy. And with Spence, again, I think the train would stop. I think Spence, all the things I just mentioned, I think that would be a bad matchup for him if Spence gets past Porter. We're talking about getting past Porter. But then comes the other thing that I said, and I like the guy, but I don't really know that I want to revisit this and see this again. But don't think that, you know, that old saying, when you thought he was gone, here he comes again. Here he comes again, Mr. Floyd Mayweather. Just when you thought he left the building, just when you thought that it was safe to come out and, you know, and talk about other fighters and you can forget about having to talk about a 40-something-year-old Mayweather who's undefeated and who loves to fight if you give him 10 zeros on his checks or whatever amount of zeros it is that you have to add them up. You're the finance guy, Ken. But whatever amount of zeros it is that it takes to get Mr. Mayweather to come out, we figured that ship had sailed. It might be pulling into harbor again. That and I don't know if I speak for fans out there. I try to say what you guys out there might be wanting me to touch on might be thinking. But some of you's got to be saying, I love Floyd. One of the great defensive fighters of our time. I love him. Give him all the credit in the world. He doesn't need me to defend him. He's tremendous. But there's got to be some of you out there doing, no, not again. But yeah, again, because I just gave all that credit to Manny being so smart and selective and such a great scout, just like Floyd, not just a great fighter. If he's all those things, he doesn't say yes to a Spence fight, Ken. He doesn't say yes to a Spence fight, Ken. He doesn't say yes to a Crawford fight. Crawford's a little different. You know, pick your poison. Pick your poison, baby. You know, Spence, you know, it's strength and it's size and it's aggression and it's relentlessness and it's power and a lot of other things. And it's all night long of that. A whole night full of that stuff. With Crawford, it's length, counterpunching, you know, controlling distance, taking your part a little bit at a time. And so I don't think either one of those fights at this point is good for Manny. And I just gave him this great credit for being the super scout to pick the right guy. They got to be looking at Floyd. Because now you can make the argument. You can say, hey, I fought him the first time I was injured. I've reversed the tables now. Everyone said I was too old. It was my time passed. I'm the younger guy now. I found the fountain of youth. Or whatever the hell that is that he found. Right? My teachers, I'm mad at my teachers, Ken. My teachers in grade school, I don't know about you, but they told me about this guy, Ponce de Leon, that it was down in Florida somewhere, and he was riding around in some kind of ship or something, and he was looking for the fountain of youth. He was looking for the fountain, Ponce de Leon. He was looking for the fountain of youth down there in Florida, and it was Manny Pacquiao. It was Manny Pacquiao. And that flag that he was flying, it was a Filipino flag. Don't they know the difference? Don't they know the difference? So all I'm saying is that Pacquiao, Mayweather, get ready, guys, to hear it. There's a chance you're going to hear that. Because they're going to say, as I just started saying, hey, you know, I was too old. I was hurt. I was too old. Everyone, I'm the young guy now. Floyd's the guy in retirement. Floyd's the guy that is missing a step. Floyd's the guy that is starting, you know, to deteriorate. I'm at my prime. I'm active. I just beat a top welterweight in the world. I mean, I gotta be the guy to worry about. Now you gotta think that I can beat Floyd now. I can make a case now that I can beat Floyd. And people will make that case with him. And there's a lot of people out there, like Muhammad Ali used to say, have them come to see me lose, have them come to see me win. There'll be a lot of people want to see Floyd Zero disappear. There'll be a lot of people that have come to see that and think that things can be different now. Although, as special as Manny is, Floyd's pretty special too. You know, Floyd reminds me of one of those baseball hitters that were pinch hitters. They were masterful pinch hitters. I remember one of them, even when he was in his 40s. His name was Rusty Staub. He played for the Mets. And he was a great pinch hitter. And he could get up out of bed in the winter in his pajamas and get up and get a pinch hit. You know, Ken? He just had the ability to get a pinch hit. If he was 110, 110, you wheel him up, right? You put a blanket on him because, you know, he doesn't handle the cold weather at 110 so well. You put a bat in his hand, and he's going to get a pinch hit. That's Floyd. Floyd, 80 years old, you bring him out in the middle of winter, and you put him out there, and he can still make you miss a punch. I mean, that might be Floyd. He can still make you miss a punch. The other guy can still get a pinch hit. Floyd can still make you miss a punch. Can still make you miss a punch. So that comes with this, you know, with this great win, with this great moment, comes other stuff that some people might not think is so great that you got to deal with. You're going to, you know, you're going to see the senior citizen tour coming back. You know, I mean, they do it in golf. They do it in golf, baby. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't want to see that fight. I'd like to see him continue. I'd love to see him fight the winner of Spence Porter. I don't think, like you, I don't think he'll beat Spence, but I think that that will be another mega fight, and I think people will get excited for it, and we'll see like two interesting clash of styles. But one thing I wanted to ask you before we close on that fight is one judge had it scored 114-112 for Thurman, and I've like tried to figure out how they got to that score. Like, it just seems completely off base to me when you factor in the knockdown. I mean, I thought Manny won at least five of the first six rounds. What were your thoughts, and how did you have it scored roughly? I don't know if you were scoring it by rounds, but what do you think of 114-112 for Thurman?
Yeah, I had it 115. I'm looking at my scorecard. I kept it. I had it 115-112 for Pacquiao. And that's coming from a guy, hopefully you wouldn't expect anything else, but a guy who picked the other guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, what's more important than anything is to tell what you believe and to stick to the truth, no matter what. And I had it 115-112 for Pacquiao. I couldn't see it any other way, really. But there's no way you could give it to Thurman. I mean, unless you're a boxing official, if you're, yeah, Ken, I can't say it. Ken, you know what I mean? It's as simple and basic as that Campbell's Soup poster behind you. You know, soup is soup. New England clam chowder is New England clam chowder. I mean, you can't get around it, baby. That's what it is. And that's the only explanation I can give you, that you're a boxing judge. And boxing judges, it's, again, how many times are we going to go down this damn road? There's no accountability. You know, there's no policing. There's nobody saying, hey, come into my office. If I'm the national czar, if I'm the commissioner, if Teddy Atlas is the commissioner, come to my office Monday. No, yes. Don't ask me what your next assignment is. Come in my office Monday. Come in. We're gonna shut the door. We're gonna watch the film. And then you're gonna explain to me how you got this score. And at the end of it, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. That's it. That's it, baby. That's, at the end of it, when I listen to the explanation, if I don't like it, I'm going to say, you've gotten your privilege to judge taken away. It's a privilege. It's a privilege, Ken. It's a responsibility, Ken. You got people's lives, careers in your hands. Careers in your hand that go in there in a dangerous business and they swap punches with somebody. You have that responsibility. I'm taking your license away. I'm going to sit you down. I'm going to put you through clinics. I'm going to put you through some teaching, and development classes where you understand the criterion of scoring. I'm going to get you to work some smaller fights, and we're going to give you an opportunity to come back, an opportunity to show that you can do a better job.
I don't think that there was a person in the arena, including Thurman and his team, that thought he won that fight. So when I heard 114-112, I was like, what? What?
I'm just tired.
I don't even know how they get to that score. I don't even know. Anyway, I'd love to hear someone justify that scorecard. Anyway, nevertheless, one other comment on the undercard, Figueroa versus Ugas. I mean, Ugas looked great against Porter, And if he had any punching power, Figueroa would have been out of there. All I could think when I was watching that is, wow, Figueroa's team did a terrible job of scouting and picking this guy, because Ugas had his way with him all night. Like I said, he has 23 or 24 wins with 11 knockouts. If he could punch, Figueroa would have been out of there in the first few rounds. And he was, I think, a fairly heavy favorite going into that fight. So that was an interesting one. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that one up in Bristol, but I was quite surprised at how dominant Ugas looked versus Figueroa.
Yeah, no, I saw it, Ken, and I agree. First of all, Figueroa's a smaller guy. They moved him up into a heavier weight class there. And Figueroa's just a game kid, and he is. He's a game kid. He's got a brother that fights who's undefeated, I believe, too. And so he comes from a fighting family, obviously. It's in their blood. It's what they do. It's what they want to do, you know, what they aspire to. But he's, I'm not going to say he's not taught or, you know, obviously he is. But his thing is to just sort of smother you, to try to be busy, to try to break you down. But you're not going to break down guys on that level that way. You know, you're not going to do it at that level. You do it at the level of 6-round, 8-round level when you're selecting your opponents the way that obviously you can do in this business, right? You can do that. You can win fights that way, and they did it. But when you get to the next level, the level that insists on other things, that demands other things, you know, other skill sets that separates you, it's more than just swarming a guy. I know there's a little awkward cleverness to Figueroa as he comes in, him move at the last second, you know, from the southpaw position, he move his head, he's awkwardly clever. But for the most part, he's just a kid looking to swarm you. He's just a kid looking to, you know, to kind of almost maul you to a certain extent, and just grind it out. And, you know, there's, you have to, if you're going to have that kind of attitude, you have to have something else with it. You got to have something else with it. Figueroa doesn't really have any physicality. He's a tough kid. He's a game son of a gun. But there's no real style to him. Again, his style is to just maul you. His style is to swarm you. His style is to hope that that's enough. And you know what? That's not enough. It's not enough in this great business, in this great sport. You know, some people, I hope they wouldn't say this, but some people say, well, Teddy, we've had, you know, some great fighters that are, yeah, they're aggressive, but they come in with other skills, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it was an Aaron Pryor. Some people say, well, Teddy, Aaron Pryor was a guy that would, yeah, but whole different skill level, you know, whole different ability level, whole different approach level. He didn't just swarm you. You know, he did it with a plan. He did it. He'd come in, then he'd come out. He'd go to the side. You know, he would switch angles on you. There was all the aggression and all the purpose of getting close to a guy that you see with Figueroa. You saw that with Aaron Pryor, but it was with all the other skills attached to it. You know, all the other, not just physical skills and more ability, obviously, than Figueroa has. You have the ability you're born with. Obviously, Pryor was born with a whole different kind of ability. But Pryor was more than just a guy that swarmed you. Pryor was a guy that knew how to do it, that made the punches count in the ways that they needed to count. He wasn't just throwing 6 punches, hoping that 2 of them would find a way. So, you know, it's a tough road for a kid like that, that gets to the point that he gets to with his family being involved, and they navigate him to a certain place where he's able to beat people with that kind of style that you just described. And And then you get to the next place. It's like, where do I go now? I can't win with this. I can't beat guys with this. Not at that level.
No. Well, in closing, like I said, it was a great show. It was nice to talk with Deontay Wilder. We'll look to at some point have him on the show. Super nice guy, very humble dude, much different person when you're speaking to him in person versus on the camera. And one other thing, you touched on it, but Max Dadashev, for those who don't know, he suffered a brain injury and a loss on Friday night. In Maryland on the Teofimo Lopez undercard, was taken into emergency brain surgery and is in recovery now in critical condition. So like you said, Teddy, our thoughts and prayers are with him. He comes from the stable of Aegis Clemens, who has a lot of those Eastern European fighters, and really nice guys. Guy has a young family, so really hoping he pulls through here. Appreciate the support, continued support for the show. You know, we wanted to get this one up quick for you, which is why, like I said, I'm in LA and Teddy's in Staten Island. We're doing the best we can. Hope that this production turns out well and you guys enjoy it. But in closing, Teddy, you got anything else?
No, I mean, we covered it all. My hat's off to a special person, a special fighter, Manny Pacquiao. You know, I mean, there's not too many people that can do this stuff, period. Especially at 40. And do it at a high level at 40. I mean, you know, we had Hopkins and George Foreman and, you know, those guys were special too. Archie Moore, if you go back, Jersey Joe Walcott, Ezra Charles, some special guys that are able to do it. But to be around... And Floyd himself. Let me put Floyd in there. God, how could I leave Floyd out? Floyd too, Mayweather, Mr. Floyd. But to be able to do what he did, boy, it's pretty special. We watched a special guy. You got to give him credit. I think we tried to touch on everything that's out there to touch on for you guys. That's why we do it. And hopefully we did. I'm going out. I'm looking for that gas station, Ken. I'm going to find it, Ken.
If you find it, please let me know. Someone said in the comments the other day, Ken looks good for 60. I
know. Why you guys do this to Ken? Really, he's a sensitive guy. He's a beautiful person. He's got a beautiful family. And why do you mess around with him like that? Really? Come on. Jesus.
Well, listen, guys, thanks for being with us, Teddy. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate your time. Shout out to PBC for the press credentials. Huge honor. Super appreciative. And guys, thanks for being with us. As always, please share the link, comment, subscribe. Let us know what you think. And thanks for being with us. That's a wrap.